Welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan. My pronouns are she, her.
I'm Joe. My pronouns are they, them.
I'm Val. My pronouns are they, he.
Yay, Val!
Hi!
Hi, friend! Welcome back to the pod.
I'm glad to be here.
Always a good time to have you on. It's June, so it's our Pride Month episode.
Happy Pride!
Yay, Pride! So we will get into all of the gay books we've been reading in a little bit. But first, we're going to talk about the things we've been reading recently. I've actually been reading a lot of queer books, so I'm going to have to go delve into the other ones, because I'm going to talk about those in a little bit.
Same. I did that, too. I was like, okay, what are the straight stuff that I've been reading? Okay.
What's the straight stuff I've been reading? So I read a few things for some podcast interviews. So I read both The Push and The Whispers by Ashley Audrain.
Finally.
They were phenomenal. I have been meaning to read The Push for like 2 years now because my bookseller friend Brittany sent me her ARC in like 2021 and was like, girl, you need to read this. And I was like, I can't wait. And then it sat on my shelf for so long. And then the publicist was like, hey, do you want to interview Ashley Audrain for The Whispers, which is her new one coming out? And I was like, oh, yes, maybe now I'll read The Push. And I did.
You did.
I did. It was great. It was great. So, yeah, if you like reading books about the dark side of parenthood, boy.
So The Whispers is also.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So The Push is like new mother having trouble bonding with her first kid. Tragedy strikes. Do we trust the older kid or not? And like dealing with all of that, the fallout and stuff. The Whispers is about four women in this little neighborhood. And they're all, three of them are like middle-aged, and then there's an older woman from, I believe, Puerto Rico. And they're all dealing with like their own stuff, their own life stuff. You're kind of following their different relationships. And basically there is, again, there's this central like tragic thing that happens that kind of rocks the neighborhood. And it starts, over the course of the book, these secrets are starting to be exposed. And like, secrets that you think are coming to light end up being actually other secrets that you're like, oh, I didn't expect that twist. And it's really interesting. And again, it does deal with the dark side of parenthood. Mm. You have like one character who, you know, is this like really amazing, attentive, like gentle parent, right? She's like really bonded with her kids. She loves being a mom. She's a stay-at-home mom. And like her best friend like does not like being a mom. She would rather work than be home with her kid. But like she doesn't hate her kids or anything. Like she's not a bad person. She's just like, she's not, you know, a very like overly flowery loving mom. She's just kind of like, yeah, my kids are alive and they're fed and that's fine. That's enough for me. It is very kind of cathartic to read as a parent because it absolutely takes those like dark thoughts that flit through your mind and like puts them out in the open and is like, okay, but what if? And it's really interesting to read. And as I was telling Ashley during my interview, I was like, honestly, reading these books as a parent, it was really nice to be like, well, you know, I may not be perfect, but at least I'm not these people. And like, we had this funny kind of tangent about how I was like, you know, I think all of these women would be so much better off if they were in therapy And she was like, well, yeah. And I was like, but also, like, who can get a therapist right now? Yeah. Like, who has the time, the money? There's no therapist with openings. Like, we're in a global pandemic. There's no possible way for them to be in therapy. So, yeah, like, they're having a tough time. Like, yeah. It was this really funny little tangent. But so highly recommend both The Push and The Whispers. And that episode, that interview is up. So go listen to that. We had a really good time chatting. Another one that I read and interviewed, I read the new book by Allie Hazelwood, Love Theoretically, which is another STEMist romance. So another woman in STEM who falls in love. And, you know, her books are so much fun. They're just cute. Like, yeah. I just like, this is very much, it's an enemies to lovers. Like, it's just great. It's really cute. Allie Hazelwood got her start writing fan fiction.
Oh, we always feel like warm feelings about
love. And I think the story goes that she literally was like, she was writing fan fiction and someone like commented on one of her fics and was like, hey, I'm an agent. I want to work with you. Like, how do I get in contact? Like, how do we make this happen? And, like, that's what started her career. Like, it's the dream. Like,
yeah, literally
the dream. And she was delightful. We, again, had a really, really good conversation. She's super cute, and her books are really fun. If you just want, like, a light summer romance, like, she's great. And she is a neuroscientist, by the way. Wow, like, Allie is one literally, like, is a professor of neuroscience. She's really cool. And she's Italian, which I did not know.
Oh.
And probably people listening are like, yeah, duh. But, like, I don't know. I don't always Google the authors that I'm reading. So she's Italian, and Allie Hazelwood is her pseudonym. So
okay.
I did not know that, but she's delightful, and I adore her. And so, yeah, Love Theoretically. Super, super cute. There's this, like, internal feud in the book between theoretical scientists and experimental scientists.
Oh, no.
And so the main character, she is a theoretical scientist, and she is trying to get this job at this university, and one of the people on the hiring committee is this experimental scientist who, when he was 17, he wrote this article that just totally blew up the science community. Like, it just, like, he put in, like, fake sources, and it got published anyway.
Oh.
And it basically proved that, like, the theoretical scientists are, like, not good scientists or whatever.
Oh, no.
And, like, and so he, like, totally made theoretical scientists, like, seem, like, just terrible at their jobs and all this stuff. It was this huge dramatic thing. And so she hates him. She despises this
man. I mean, rightfully so.
Rightfully so. She's like, you ruined, like, the careers of so many people. You ruined the career of my mentor and all this stuff.
How did he not get called out for the fake?
Well, he did, but it was, his point was, well, you published it. Like, I put in these fake sources, and you didn't check them. Like, you published it anyway because you just assumed they were correct because none of what you do is real science or whatever. Like, it was, like, he, like, did it on purpose to blow up.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. And so he's on the hiring committee, and she's like, absolutely not. But what's great is that in her, like, her, like, not career, so, like, she's an adjunct professor, the other thing she does to make money is that she works for a fake dating company.
Oh, no.
So she literally will go on, she will be hired by guys who are like, I need you to pretend to be my girlfriend because my family, like, whatever. So she'll go on these, like, fake dates with guys and, like, you know, the guys are not, like, whatever.
Right.
And so when she sits down at the hiring committee and she sees this guy who she knows him as, is she knows him by a different name, which is the brother of the guy that she's been fake dating.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. She never put two and two together that his name extended out in a non-nickname form is the guy who blew up this whole section of science. And so he knows her as his brother's girlfriend, a librarian. So he's like, you're not a theoretical scientist. You're a librarian. What are you doing applying for this job? It's amazing. That's like where it starts. It's so great. And then, of course, like they, you know, chemistry. It's great. And like he's got his own reasons for doing what he did. And, you know, he's pretty great. I like him a lot, actually. Yeah, it's really fun. It's a really fun book. Good summer read. I also, Joe, I read Raw Dog. Listened to it. Oh my god.
I know.
What a great book.
Ugh, I love Jamie Loftus so much.
What a great book. I've never cared so much about hot dogs.
I know.
Like.
What a sentence. So I know. Like,
she literally, like, I don't know, she goes on this crazy road trip around the country.
Trying
hot dogs. And, like, at one point breaks up with her boyfriend. And, like, it's great.
Goes to the hot dog eating contest, the Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July. And, like,
it's great. It's really fun. It's just, like, a really fun, like, nonfiction. Yeah.
Just kind of wacky, it's but, wild. Like, great. It's, yeah. And actually, the podcast, the live podcast recording I went to, she was the guest, and she was saying that she had a much longer section about the women's professional eating competition, and they, like, cut it down a little because she got ranty, so she was like, so now I'm going to give it to you all right here, and, like, went on this rant about the history of hot dog eating contests and gender. Mm. Fantastic.
That's incredible. Yeah, it's really it's a really fun book. I told my husband to listen to it because he's a foodie. we have watched the hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July. Not live, not in person, but
yeah, no.
But they air it on like ESPN2 or whatever.
This is like a legit.
Oh, it's a real thing.
They air the men's on ESPN, the women's is on ESPN,
there it is, yes. Yeah. No, it's a real, it's the Nathan's
famous, like, have famous you ever heard
hot dog
of,
eating challenge?
So Joey's Chestnut is, like, the reigning champion.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's disgusting. They will take their hot dog in the bun and, like, dip it in a cup of water and just, like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Down the gullet.
Like, tens, I don't know how many, but, like, in like 10 minutes, I think. Yeah.
Too many.
How are you not sick afterwards?
It's a lot of them are.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
It is horrifying, and I love it. Yeah. So, the book is much funnier than just that. But
yeah, I would assume so.
But yeah, she just like bounces all over the country and like visits these little like hot dog places and like ranks their hot dogs. It's kind of like the Anthropocene Reviewed, but for hot dogs.
And talks about, like, the history of, like, hot dog production and, like, socialism. And, like, it's so random.
It's great.
And great.
It's really fun. It's a fun, I feel like it's a fun, like, gift book.
Yeah.
For, like, your weird uncle. It's great. So, yeah, I really, really loved that. And then a couple others that I just listened to, which are for interviews, which I don't know if they'll be up yet by the time this goes up. Probably they will. So go look for those. One of them is The Only One Left, the new Riley Sager book. Ooh. Loved it. If you like Hitchcock movies, you will like this book.
Okay.
It reads the way a Hitchcock movie feels to watch.
Huh.
It is this caretaker, so this young woman who works for, it's kind of like hospice, and she, you know, takes care of elderly people kind of at the end of their life, and she, for some reason that is alluded to in the beginning, has been on suspension from her place of employment, and now she's come back for, you know, her first day back from suspension, and she's given a new assignment, and it's a live-in position at this house, and the client is this woman who is a legend, and not in a fun way. Think Lizzie Borden.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Think Lizzie Borden if Lizzie Borden had lived into her, like, 80s or 90s.
Oh, no.
And was, you know, stuck in her house, basically. Like, mm-hmm. Not quite bedridden, but basically bedridden.
Housebound.
And, yeah, and so there's, like, you know, the rhyme about her and and all this stuff. And, yeah, essentially she was the legend goes that she killed her whole family. And so that's where the book starts of here's this caretaker who has something going on in her past that unfolds over the course of the book, and she is tasked with taking care of this potential murderer. It is really great. Riley Sager is just a master of a twist ending.
Yeah.
That man, every book of his I read, there's at least three times where I just go, oh, what? And this, I think, is his twistiest of his books in that, like, every time there is a twist, I thought it was, like, the big twist, and then there would be another one, like, 25 pages later, and I'd be like, wait, what? It's great. It's really fun. It's dark, but not, you know, gory. Like, he doesn't write horror necessarily. He's more thriller mystery. So, it's, you know, it's good for people who like to dip a toe in the darkness, but they're not necessarily, like, into the horror genre. Yeah, I really loved this one. It's got the best cover. I mean, he always lucks out with his covers. He usually has these, like, really cool, like, neon covers. But this one, it's, like, bright red and bright blue and black. And it's this, like, mansion on a cliff. And, like, the house that the woman lives in is on this cliff. And the cliff itself is eroding. So the house is crooked.
Mm.
Which is just, like, the biggest metaphor for, like, the whole thing.
It's just, like, a series of unfortunate
Yeah. Oh, it's really good. So, yeah, I got to chat with Riley about that one, which was fantastic. And then the last one I'm going to talk about in this portion is The 7-Year Slip by Ashley Poston. Mm-hmm. I adore Ashley Poston. She wrote The Dead Romantics, which I loved. And this one is really, really cute. Sam talked about it when she was on. But essentially, it is the story of this woman who inherits her aunt's apartment. And it's a magic apartment in that every once in a while, you'll walk into the apartment and it's 7 years in the past.
Mm.
And sometimes there's a person there who lived there 7 years ago. And you're like, oh, hello. And so what happens is she walks into her apartment and there's this guy there. Or I guess she wakes up and the guy is there being like, hi, who are you? And she's like, oh, dear God. And it's this young guy who was subletting the apartment 7 years ago while actually she and her aunt were, like, in Iceland or something.
Okay.
What's the tricky thing about the apartment is that it doesn't necessarily stay in the past. So, like, you know, she's here with this guy right now. They're having this conversation. And then she'll leave and come back and it's present. Like, he's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's, but then, like, you know, a week later she might walk in and there he is. So
they
fall in love because it's a romance, and have to kind of figure that out because he doesn't know that she's from 7 years in the future.
Is the decoration in the apartment all the same, or is it
Like, she walks in and you can see, like, why is all my aunt's stuff up on the walls? Like, I packed all this up a week ago, right? Like, she walks in and it is clearly 7 years ago. Yeah. And then you meet him in the present. It's great. It's great. It's really fun. It's really good.
It kind of gives off, I don't know if you've seen the movie, Your Name vibes.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that.
Another time traveling thing where they're, like, talking, but unbeknownst to one of them, for one of them, it's 3 years in the past. Oh. So they go to meet up, and obviously they're not going to be there. Oh, and no. So it's very, and you realize, we have this connection for a reason, because something tragic is going to happen.
Yes.
And they have to prevent it. And it's, a really great movie, really great graphics, highly recommend.
Incredible. Yeah, I love a time travel love story. I love, a fated mate's story. And it's sweet. Like, you learn things about her aunt from, you know, when she was alive. And, it's really beautiful. And there's, you know, a level of grief throughout the book because, you know, the young woman is dealing with the death of her aunt. And Ashley Poston writes grief so beautifully. Mm-hmm. She dealt with it in The Dead Romantics. She deals with it here. And in both cases, she had something in her life, you know, as she was writing it, happen. And so she it's really raw. Like, it's really, really well done. I loved it so much. And so, she's gonna be on the podcast. I'm chatting with her in a couple of days, and it's not gonna be a typical interview. She's gonna be giving her summer reading recommendations.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so that episode might be up by the time this one goes up. If not, it'll be up soon. But I'm really, really looking forward to chatting with her because she's delightful and I love her, and I can't wait to hear her recommendations. So that's a lot of what I've been up to. Yeah. Not all of it, but you'll hear the rest later. Joe, what about you? What have you been reading?
Yeah, again, like Ryan, I have a few that I'm going to save. But I read The Daydreams, or listened to The Daydreams by Laura Hankin, in one day. Yeah. It is incredibly captivating or, page-turning. It is about a woman who, she's in her 30s now, but when she was a teenager, she was a child star on a popular kids show, Disney Channel, Nickelodeon style show.
Yep.
And she was the mean girl on the show. She has kind of moved on with her life. Something happened at the finale. There was a live finale of season 2. And they never got another episode, and the movie that they had been promised was canceled.
Oh, no!
So, much of the book is around, you don't know what exactly went down during that live finale. Whoa. But something bad happened. And so she is approached to do a reunion.
Okay.
And so she's reuniting with the other members of the main cast. Mm-hmm. So, Kat is our main character. Liana was the best friend in the show. Mm-hmm. She's now an Instagram influencer, hawking flat tummy tea and just posting about her husband all the time.
Naturally.
It's incredible. All of the characters are so well characterized.
Yeah.
Noah, who was the love interest, is now the only one who's still an actor. He is a very successful actor who's about to star in the next big superhero franchise.
Okay.
Yeah. And Summer, who was the star of the show, and it is implied that she had something to do with what happened in the finale. Mm. And she has gone on to do the kind of troubled child star route of a failed music career, many stints in rehab.
Yep.
And she is the one who finally convinces Kat to come back and do this reunion episode. Mm. And so it's them all kind of dealing with their trauma and stuff that they've all kind of just put behind them.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of, figuring out what it means to return to this thing that was so important to them as teenagers and, yeah, I think it's, you know, hitting that moment of, like, you know, Jeanette McCurdy's book.
And my mom died.
Yeah, and that sort of re-looking at those, like, mid-aughts shows that we all watched and being like, oh, wait, maybe that was a terrible place for teenagers, especially girls, to be. And maybe it was not, like, so that kind of re-examining of it. And it's just, it's just really readable. Like, I think that it will be so my number one, like, beach read. Like, if somebody comes in and is like, I need something for my vacation, like, this is the perfect. So that one was very good. Mm. I also listened to Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone.
How was that?
By Benjamin Stevenson. I liked it. It is a locked room mystery. It's at a ski chalet in Australia. There's a family reunion. And the family is pretty messy.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Everyone's killed someone. And the biggest point of contention is the main character, Ernest's brother, is coming straight to this family reunion from prison. And maybe Ernest had something to do with why he's in prison. But they're all supposed to attend. And it's a very, like, snarky, humorous narrator, lots of fourth wall breaking, the introduction.
Oh, I love fourth wall breaks.
Yeah, the introduction's like, okay, so here, it's going to be chapter 3, chapter 7, chapter, those are when the deaths are going to happen. And
I love that.
Yeah, and so, of course, it's all a lot more complicated than it sounds from the beginning. And so it goes through all the family members and who they've killed and how they might or might not be involved in the murder that occurs during this. So it is,
that sounds fun.
It is a good time. Yeah, it's like a good murder mystery. Everybody's stuck in a blizzard, so they can't get out. They only have so many people who could have done it.
Blizzard setting.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I love.
And it's, it's very fun. I also, again, listened to Velvet Was the Night by Silvia Moreno Garcia.
I need to listen to that one.
Yeah, that one came out last year, and I just never got around to it. But, yeah, love her. And I love how all of her books are very different, like, very
so different,
different, like, settings, and
she's like a chameleon. It's amazing.
Yeah. So this one is a noir set in Mexico City in the 1970s, and it switches between two perspectives. Maite, who is a secretary, she spends most of her time daydreaming of adventure and her, like, romance comics that she reads, and she gets pulled into a group of radical students, protesters, because she agrees to cat sit for her neighbor, who is tied up in all of these communist, rebellious groups.
Oh my gosh.
And so she gets pulled into that, and then the other point of view is Elvis, who is a member of a secret paramilitary group that's operating in Mexico City. This was a real group that existed, who were trying to shut down these radical protesters, keep communism out of Mexico. So a lot of, like, CIA training for people who, it's all that kind of shady behind the scenes work. And he is looking for Maita's neighbor, who has now gone missing.
Oh.
And he, so throughout the book, they're circling each other, but they don't interact much. So he, like, breaks into her apartment and realizes they have the same taste in music.
And, like, oh, man.
Yeah. And so, like, he starts to get to know her.
Yeah.
And because he's a spy, basically.
It's a little creepy.
And and so it's very interesting where she'll be like, and then this guy walked in or whatever, and, like, whereas he's like, oh, it's her, oh my god, this woman who I've been, like, following and know everything about. And she's just
crazy.
Like, I don't know,
So yeah, it's just, it's a good mystery, murder mystery, noir, story. And then two others that I'll talk about. I just finished Carmilla by Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu. Specifically the version that's edited by Carmen Maria Machado, which, yeah, shout out to, one of our bookseller friends, Abby, who alerted me to the fact that Carmen Maria Machado had edited a version of Carmilla. For those who aren't familiar with it, Carmilla is a sapphic vampire classic. It predates Dracula. It's a little novella. I think it's like 120, 150 pages. And it's great. And really establishes some of the tropes of vampires in literature. And Carmen Maria Machado's editing is so good. It's so snarky and tongue-in-cheek and incredible. And I'll just say, when you are reading her notes, you know, maybe Google some of the stuff. Fact check her on some of the things. Because, you know, fiction is malleable. Yep. So yeah, so it's like she's creating her own work through this classic novella. So
I love it so
it's so
much.
Good. It's so good. And then the last one that I'm currently reading right now is The Saint of Bright Doors by Vajra Chandarasekara, I think. This was one that Rita recommended to us.
Oh, yes,
Rita
yes.
Chang Epping, who wrote Deep as the Sky, Red as the Sea. And yeah, so it takes place. The main character is named Fetter. He is the son of a prophet slash god figure called the Perfect in Kind. And is raised by his mother to kill his father.
Oh.
She's not happy with his father.
I guess not.
And he, his childhood's fairly abusive, you know, as one would imagine. She's teaching him how to murder people.
Yeah.
So he kind of escapes her control and moves to one of the cities. This is kind of a, it's not... It's set in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
And he has joined a support group for the Almost Chosen. So anyone who was almost a chosen one, who, you know, he should have been the heir apparent to this prophet god, but he's not. And he has friends who, yeah, are in. And there are so many of these cults and sects in this society.
Yeah.
That there are so many of these people who have almost been chosen for something, and they're all kind of competing to be the most powerful deity or religion. And in this city there are these magical doors called bright doors, because they're painted bright, that are, they occur when you leave a door closed for too long.
Okay.
And you can't open them. And there's just something weird about them. And it seems the Almost Chosen have some sort of connection to these doors.
Ooh.
And so he starts to try to infiltrate the group studying these doors.
Okay.
And I think the thing to note about this book is that it is fascinating because all of this, like, high adventure and everything in it, it also has... is so mundane and boring at times, like, purposefully, like, just, you know, getting those phone calls from an abusive mother who is blaming him for everything that's wrong in his in her life, and, like, oh god, my dad's coming to town, like, we don't talk, like, what am I gonna do? It's very, you know, he's in a relationship, like, how much of my terrible childhood do I tell my new boyfriend? Like, it's a very interesting combination of these, like, incredibly fantastical, mythic stakes and just the most mundane, boring, like, how am I going to get through the day? How am I going to relate to my family sort of stuff. So it is really good. That one is coming out in July.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Man, What a good juxtaposition. I love that.
Yeah, it's so good.
Awesome. Fel, what have you been reading?
Yeah.
I am a failure of a queer. I've only been reading straight romances recently.
Illegal. We're going to have to ask you to leave.
I know. Fake fan over here.
Oh my god.
My girlfriend would be so disappointed in me.
How dare you?
Not to be that, like, reader, but I did just finish Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros.
Please yes. talk about it, because I feel like I hear so many people I don't know talking about it, but I want more perspectives from people who, like, I know and trust.
Yeah. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was. I take book talk books with, like, a grain of salt. I'm like, like, just in general, this book, I opened it, I could not put it down. Mm-hmm. It was very much like, hey, here's all your favorite fantasy tropes in one book.
Ooh. Okay.
And so we had, it's school, so like she's going to dragon school, like dragon riding school, to get a dragon, and to become like a soldier. Mm. She doesn't want it, she wants to be a scribe. She's prepared her whole life to be a scribe. And her mom's like, no. Her mom is like the general of one of the generals of the riders, and she's like, you're gonna be a rider, and if I see you try to go to the scribe school, I will pull you out myself and put you in the rider's hall, like,
yikes.
Area. So she has no choice. She has to be a rider.
Yep.
People have prepared for this, like, test to get into the school for all their whole life. They prepared this for the school their whole life. She has 6 months. Like, she had six months to prepare. It opens up with her going into the school, which, you know, to get to the school, they have you, like, do this impossible test. Many people die on it.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, here's your entry test. If you survive, you're in. If you don't, well.
Don't have to worry about it, I guess.
Literally. But it was really good. It was, I really liked the lore.
Mm-hmm.
So world building is always, like, tricky in high fantasy books, because it's like, you can go on for too long, you can have too much, you can have too little,
yeah.
It can be a mess. How she did it was really quite brilliant. So because this main character wanted to be a scribe, something that she does to calm herself down when she's having anxiety attacks, is she recites history.
Ooh.
So we got chunks of world building when she was calming herself down.
That's cool.
She would be reading it to her, like, she'd be telling herself just from things she's memorized.
That's clever.
I thought that was, like, just a really great way to just introduce people to the world, to have people know kind of what's going on. And yeah, so that was, like, really good.
Did I hear correctly that she, or maybe someone in the book, has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome? I read somewhere that there's disability rep.
There is disability rep. I'm not sure what that's.
It's like a joint.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, she's got very, very, yeah, she's, her bones are very fragile, so it's very, so it's part of why she really didn't want to be a rider, because you have to be, like, you can't, your bones can't break at every turn for that.
Right, and, right. Interesting.
So she's got, that disability while she's trying to be, like, part of this, but the dragons, they sold it, like, again, with dragon books, especially ones we're kind of out of the youth fiction, dragons don't seem to have as big role as like they do. Like, you don't get, like, the kind of bonding you do with, like, Aragorn.
Right.
It's like, they're there. They exist. Either you ride it, you kill it, you...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. We had a bond. They talked. I was like, okay, this sold me. Because I get a grumpy old man dragon.
Yes.
So I will take the rest of the series from his perspective and his perspective only.
Literally.
But it was a really, really good read, and I do highly recommend it. Definitely worth all the hype it has gotten. All
right, you've sold me. You've sold me. I've had my eye on it since it came in with the fancy sprayed edges. I'm sorry, listeners, we're sold out. Everyone's sold out. There's no more sprayed edges. I'm sorry.
They don't exist in the
We
wild
have the anymore. Regular hardback. We don't have the sprayed edges. I'm sorry. It's beautiful, but... I've, like, had my eye on it, but I feel like every review I've seen has just been, oh my god, you have to read this, and I'm like, well, that doesn't tell me anything. Yeah. Like, that's all well and good, but I have other things I have to read. But alright.
Like, everybody is, like, scared of divulging one thing of spoilers, and I'm like, you gotta have to give a little bit to get people into it.
Yeah, you have to talk a little bit about it. Yeah.
Like.
Okay. No, I'm sold. I will read it.
Another thing I've been, like, reading is the Four Horsemen series by Laura Thalassa. Mm-hmm. So she wrote the Rhapsodic series, which I really liked, and that was between, like, a siren and a dark fae king.
Ooh.
She owed him favors, and so, and he came to collect one day, and was like, ooh. Hey. Throw some murder mystery in there, and this whole other, like, side world. So I really like that. So I saw that she had this Four Horsemen series. It's four books, Pestilence, War, Famine, Death.
Amazing.
And they're romances. They're really dark romances. Like, you have to give to, like, because it's very, very morally gray, because these men are literally being sent to destroy your world.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There is no changing the atrocities they have done. There is no changing, like, their very nature.
Mm.
And they are not kind at first. Well, okay, I take that back. Pestilence and Famine are not kind at first. War and Death seem to be, are more like enamored with their love interest than the other two. Pestilence, okay, it took me a while to get into the series because Pestilence was kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
It felt like, if you look at the books, Pestilence is the smallest,
mm-hmm.
and it felt rushed. He did, like, at one point, like, when they met, she killed him brutally. So man held a grudge.
Amazing.
He held a grudge against her.
All right, fair.
But that meant he's like, I'm gonna make you, like, wish, like, you've never been born and stuff. Right. And this was not, like, typical, like, meanness. This is a tie her to the back of the horse and drag her meanness.
Right.
So, because he did that, I was not sold on the chemistry between them.
Yeah.
And she, like, fell way too fast. It mm-hmm. felt like, so again, the series took me a while to get into because Pestilence just felt rushed. It felt too cruel to forgive so, like, quickly. Yeah. And, like, all the while, she has to see, like, all the destruction he's doing by spreading the plague.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe not my series. War sold it.
In comes War.
War comes, and he's like, they kind of, what was his name from Game of Thrones? Khal Drogo.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yep.
The first time he meets, like, the woman that's gonna end up being his partner, he's like, he calls her wife. Like, he knows instinctively. So he, like, and he is so, like, protective. Like, he's like, she literally is like, no, I'm, like, not gonna be with you. Like, you're horrible. You have all this war going on. You, like, you're killing all these people. Like, why would I ever, like, but, you know, he's like, okay, wife. Like, he just, like.
Oh, my God.
He's literally a himbo, and I love him.
Love.
A bloodthirsty himbo.
Incredible.
War of the himbo.
Literally. It's like, so he did sell me on the rest of the series, because his book was fantastic. It was great.
Awesome.
Famine, the banter, that book was top-notch banter. She would drive him up the wall on purpose. She'd get him, and so then she'd push more. She had this man looking up to God for help so many times. It was just hilarious. And he's like, why are you like this?
Oh my God.
So another thing I really liked about the series is it was very geographical, because it's all in our world. Pestilence book took place in North America. Wars took place in the Middle East.
Okay.
Famines took place in South America and Brazil.
Cool.
And then the last one, I think it does take place up here again.
Yeah.
But they did go very, like, you know, spread out and had different religions and different cultures represented, which, I mean, you don't see that a lot in these kind of romances. So yeah, no, I really did like that.
America.
Yeah.
Maybe Europe. Maybe a little spicy Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I did really enjoy that series. They're re-coming out, I think, in August, I think, is when they hit the shelves.
I'll have to keep an eye out for those.
Definitely recommend those, but they are very morally gray. So,
you know,
it is a...
Sometimes that's what you want.
Yeah.
Sometimes
it is, like... I know we like our morally gray characters, but mm-hmm. how morally gray do we like them?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, a genre I've been into lately with the graphic novels would be, like, the villainous genre.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, titles, like, from that would be, like, The Abandoned Empress. And when I say villainous, most of them are either reborn or they are, or their time gets set back. So, ooh. Abandoned Empress, she had, like, this really sad life, was betrayed by the one man she, like, only loved. Like, she's like, all I did was love you and be, like, a good support for you, and he, like, chose this other woman, and she was framed for crimes she didn't do. He, like, killed her father.
Jeez.
And so she tried to stab him, but because he was, like, the king that was, or emperor, that was a sign of treason. So she has a public execution and wakes up as a child, all memories intact, and realizes, I have, like, this much time to prevent that from happening again.
Whoa!
So she's like, I'm not doing this again. I'm not gonna, he's not gonna get my love again. I'm gonna become a knight. And so it's just her kind of resetting her destiny and all those fun things.
That's awesome.
So that's what I really love in the villainous trope, is a lot of them, they either get set back in time and they're like, well, not again.
Yeah.
The other one is Villains Are Destined to Die. Mm. Really gorgeous art with this one. And this one is a character who was actually, she dies in our world and is reincarnated into this fantasy world from a game she used to play.
Oh,
so
cool.
She knows all the characters. She knows what's going to happen. And she's like, I'm the villainess. I'm going to die. I need to, like, make it so I don't die. But she has this really cold family, and at first she can't do anything but, like, the game options, because she hasn't, like, earned the right to, like, be her own person yet.
Yes.
So, and, like, she can see what makes this one, like, a little bit different is she can see how everybody ranks her.
Yep.
So her brothers are, like, 4% liking, and her,
oh my God.
And whatnot.
That's so funny.
And, like, yeah, so she's, so at first she has to try and play and try to get away with, like, not having outbursts like the original villainess did, so she can break this kind of, like, only having game settings on, she can, get out of this, because all her roots literally are, like, you're gonna die, and she's like, no.
What if I didn't, though?
So that's the genre I've really been liking, so.
Nice. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of just been what I've been up to, so.
Awesome. So, it's Pride.
It's Pride.
Woo!
It's Pride, we're gonna talk about queer books. I think specifically, We're gonna highlight some of our favorite trans books.
Yeah, and I think,
in addition to other queer books.
Yeah, and, like, other underrepresented, whether asexual.
Yeah.
I know Fal has a few different recommendations on that. I think, yeah. It is been a rough pride.
It has.
If we're honest, it's been a rough pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and, I mean, it's been a rough year.
It's been a rough year.
It's been a rough time.
Yeah.
To be queer in America. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I know we say this a lot, but we're here.
Yeah.
Please, we're not ever going to take down our pride displays. Like,
yeah.
That's, it's not going to happen. We will continue to be here for you all.
Yeah. We're never going to be, you know, bullied out of being a loud, supportive place.
Yeah.
Looking around at some of the corporations that are, backing down, we are doing the opposite. We're leaning in.
And that's, we'll obviously be talking about the books, that we want to highlight, but we do have a display currently in the store that is specifically trans books. So if you need specifically books by and about trans people, we have a whole display for you, and we have lots of lists if you come in after June.
Yep. We just got our queer bookmarks reprinted
with some fresh recommendations.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I will link all of those shoppable lists in the show notes, because there are many phenomenal books out there for all different ages, all different identities. But, yeah. So, let's see. What about let's jump in. So, a couple that I want to jump right in on. I've been reading some trans horror.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. And I love it, that for you.
I love and it for me, too. So, one author who I want to highlight is Alison Rumfitt.
Mm-hmm.
Her first book that I read was called Tell Me I'm Worthless.
Yep.
Which is TERFs and a haunted house and chaos ensues.
It's like a haunted house as the representation of the rise of fascism in Great Britain. It is freaking wild, guys.
It is. It is truly unhinged. And then I just read her next book, which comes out later this year.
Yeah, I think in October, I believe.
In October. It's called Brainworms.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, boy! This book. And so it's Brainworms, one word, Brainwyrms. It is... I don't even know how to describe it. There's, oh gosh, I truly, think of, like, the worst, like, TERFs and anti-trans people you can think of, and imagine that those people have, like, worms in their brain. And that's what makes them terrible.
Ryan, I'm not coming to work the rest of this week. I'm just going to read this book, sorry.
And their whole goal is, like a parasite, to spread their parasite to others. But, like, it's not a metaphor.
It's not really a metaphor, but it's so... Oh, that's so good.
It's so good. And then also, like, there's... a character who, like, has, like, a parasite kink. You should see my face right now, like, trying to put this into words. Like, she wants to have a parasite, wants to give parasites to other, like, wants to infect. And then also on the other side of this, you have a trans woman with an impregnation fetish.
Mm-hmm.
And those two hook up.
That makes sense.
Fine. It is so dark. Oh. It is deeply disturbing and upsetting and so good. It's so good. Excited. And there is absolutely a J.K. Rowling character in this book.
Love it.
And it is, I mean, literally the only thing that's different about this character and real life J.K. Rowling is the name. That's it. And maybe the parasites. I don't know.
I don't know. Probably not.
I don't know.
Seems reasonable to think she has brainworms at this point.
Yeah. Wow. Oof. I started this book, like, last week or something when I first got it. And, I mean, it opens with, like, a note. So it's, like, within the fiction, but it's also meta. It's like, a note about, by the author.
Okay.
About, like...
Huh.
It's very meta. It's very, like, within the fiction of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, like, when I wrote my first book, I could never have imagined blah, 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 blah. And it's like, so it's...
Oh.
It's really interesting. And so, like, I read that and I was like, wow, I need to, like, set aside, I need to, like, finish a couple other things so that I can focus entirely on this book.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I, like, finished a couple other books. And then I went to New York a few days ago and read this book on the train and, like, and then, like, waiting for my train, I just sitting there, like, unable to put it down. And I just kept thinking that if the people next to me happened to glance over, they would be so horrified by what was on the page. Oh my god. That. It is so good. And yet, like, so deeply upsetting. Like,
and like, I think, like, if you're a horror reader who feels like you have, you're kind of desensitized to a lot of things, trans horror.
Holy moly.
Body horror wise, there are some trans authors absolutely destroying that genre in a way that, like, no cis person ever has.
It's,
like,
incredible. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's horror, so obviously all the trigger warnings. Like, if you can think of a trigger warning, it's probably applicable. Like, it's, you know, it is horror. It is trans horror. It is so well written. Mm. There are, like, sections of the book that are, you know, taken straight out of, like, online forums and things like that. Like, it is a really, really interesting framework of the world we live in with this horrific twist of literal parasites in the brain. It is so good. It is so good. Okay. So there's that one. And then I also am currently reading Manhunt by Gretchen Felker Martin, which I'm loving. Loving so much. So again, trans horror, right? Like, gender apocalypse, but written by a trans woman. So so it's a good one. I'm not very far into that one yet, but I am loving it. Gretchen is a phenomenal writer.
Yeah, and I was giving a brief, like, little summary to Sam, our coworker, and she was like, "What? What?" Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, yep, yep, yeah,
yeah." There's a disease. There's a plague that happens, and everyone with a certain level of testosterone turns into this animalistic monster that is just doing all the things we don't like that men do.
And trans women have to keep their estrogen levels up, and
there's a certain way that they have discovered that they can do that. And I'm so sorry, dear listeners. It is by eating the testicles of the men.
Yep. So they have to hunt these animalistic zombie creatures and eat their testicles in order to not turn into
one of these creatures.
One of these creatures, and to, you know, continue to live their life as themselves.
It's great. I'm loving it so far.
Fal's face.
Fal's horrified.
Fal does not do horror. Fal is like, what?
Fal does not do horror. I'm getting the horror ones out of the way. So loving that. We're actually discussing that in the Jack of All Graves book club this month, which I'm really excited for.
I'm gonna have to get you to, like, send me the link.
Yeah, I will. I'm
out of school chaos.
It's next Saturday, so
okay.
And then another one that I just read, which is my current staff pick of the month, is Everything the Darkness Eats by our buddy Eric LaRocca.
Yay!
We love. This is another one of those books that I'm like, how do I describe this book?
Fair.
I'm actually gonna pull up my staff pick review because I think I did an okay job there. Okay. So let me pull that up because it's like this really interesting juxtaposition of horror and religion and worship and dark deals. So this is what I wrote for my review. If you like your horror to leave you battered and raw, buckle up, I have your next read. Everything the Darkness Eats is bursting with malevolence, desperation, trauma, and love. At times you will feel utterly consumed by the darkness, and at other times you will catch a glimpse of the light. This novel may be small, but it is a beast in its own right. Do not underestimate it. Eric LaRocca's writing is gorgeous and addictive. Everything the darkness eats is razor sharp, and it will hurt you. So if you're into that, go for it. I did, and I regret nothing. There's so much that happens in this tiny novel. It's so rich. It's so deep.
Okay.
And it is so unique, and so, so well written, and I could not put it down. I loved it. So yeah, it is.
Okay. Whew.
You're gonna need to read this one.
Yeah. I know, we both have been like talking constantly over the past couple months being like, we need to both read Eric LaRocca, and we just, and no, I have the audiobook. I'll need to.
I loved the audiobook.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really well done. And man, queer horror is just like having a moment, and I'm so here for it.
Yeah. So, do you mind if I jump in with a queer horror?
I would love that.
YA queer horror that I just read. The Spirit Bears Its Teeth by Andrew Joseph White. So people may know Andrew from Hell Followed With Us. Mm-hmm. So very body horror happy, both of his books. This one is set in like an alternate history, London in 1883. The veil between the living and dead has thinned, and there are people born with violet eyes who can communicate with the dead. And the women, and I'm putting that in scare quotes because our main character is a trans boy, but they are not allowed to use their powers to communicate with the dead. Their only job is to become wives and give people children with violet eyes.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And so then within this world, our main character is Silas Bell. He is an autistic trans boy. He has violet eyes, but he does not want to marry and have children with some man that he doesn't know. And his dream is to be a doctor like his older brother. And he tries to make this happen and gets caught. And gets sent to kind of a sanatorium / finishing school for people, girls, quote unquote, who have the violet eyes, who have what they're calling veil sickness, which basically means they're being rebellious. They might have tried to use some of their psychic powers, and they are trying to rehabilitate them because there are so few people with these violet eyes. They can't just dismiss, lock these people up and never pay attention to them again. They need them to marry and have children. And as you might imagine, things aren't great at that school. Nasty things are happening. Yeah. So, there is a lot of, like, really horrible abuse and very graphic body horror, but it is really well done. And I think, Andrew Joseph White does a really, really good job with these kind of horrific trans stories. And, I would highly recommend it. It comes out later this year, and I think I liked it better than his first. Cool. So, very gothic, very.
I'm very excited to read that.
Yeah, that one's good. Very good.
I have one that's not queer horror.
Okay.
It's queer romance. It's very cute. So I'm listening to Big Gay Wedding.
Oh, I've heard good things about that.
It's by Byron Lane. It's really cute.
Okay.
It's really cute. So it is, what's interesting about this book is that it's got multiple perspectives, and, you know, one of the perspectives, you've got this very sweet gay couple who are engaged, and they're, you know, the son comes home to his family's farm to introduce his mom to his fiance, and you know, there's, okay, now there's going to be a big gay wedding. One of the other perspectives, and the first perspective that you get, is the mom. They refer to her as Farmer Mom. She lives on a farm. Her husband has passed. Her, you know, her son's moved away. She's all by herself on this farm. She's a little bit homophobic. She really hoped that her son had, you know, grown out of his phase. But through the course of the novel, she actually is really working on herself to change this, change her mindset. Like, she really works on supporting her son. And she, you know, from the beginning to the end, like, you watch her little arc go. And it's really kind of sweet to watch her, like, have these moments where she's like, oh, huh. Like, these little epiphanies that she has. And, like, you know, she, like, has a chat with the local pastor and realizes, like, oh, you're way worse than I thought you were. And, like, she has a chat with, you know, her future son-in-law's mother, and is like, oh, am I the wrong one? Like, am I the drama? Like, it's so, like, you, in addition to this very sweet gay couple who are, like, living their lives and, you know, planning their big gay wedding, like, you have this character who's, like, she's not a bad person, but she has bad beliefs, but she realizes over the course of the novel that they're bad beliefs. And so she's like, I'm going to change my brain. You know what? Hey, turns out I kind of like my son's fiance. Turns out he's kind of a good guy. And hey, maybe I've been wrong this whole time. And, like, it's really, I think healing.
Yeah.
It feels like a very healing book. It feels like the type of book that, you know, is very much like, I don't know, wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's very sweet, and it is very funny at times, because the fiance, his family is wild. His mom is like a socialite. She's like a lush in a trunk. And, like, she's super, super uber rich. His twin sister is like, all right, I'm gonna plan this wedding. We're gonna dig a lake, and we're gonna order in swans, and we're gonna overnight some fireflies, and we're gonna train the macaws to say welcome. And we're gonna, like, it's so funny. And then, like, the main character, the son, his grandpa is, like, living in this nursing home, and his grandpa's, like, the most confused, supportive guy. like, he's just kind of like, yeah, sure. Gay grandkids are all the rage right now. Like, he's just like, sure, go for it. Like, I support you. I don't really get it, but I like you. It's like the perfect mix of, like, lighthearted, very sweet and tender. You know, the homophobia that is in there is, like, combated so instantaneously that it's really kind of like, oh, good, all right. Yeah. Like, I wish this was how it was really handled in the real world. I'm like, ah. I wish everyone could just wake up and be like, oh my god, I've been wrong this whole time. It's great. And there are some truly spectacular takedowns of homophobes, which is awesome. Just, like, the best monologues and One of them gets punched in the face. Oh, it's great. It's great. So it's really, it's a fun one. And their romance is so good. They're just so stinking cute. Aww. The gay couple, I just love them so much. I love them so much. They're very, very sweet. So I've been reading that one. I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh. Val, do you have any recommendations for us?
Yeah.
No, they came completely unprepared. He has nothing.
No, I decided to just pull it out of thin air. We go with...
So I just wanted to hear what we were talking about.
Exactly. I'm just here for the show. there have been some especially with, like, non-binary characters, which I really like. A YA title that, like, just came out in May would be A Court of Undying Seasons by A.M. Strickland. I think I talked about her last time I was here, because I really do like her book. She does really great, like, queer rep, trans rep, and she's like, this one was vampires, and I'm always a bit hesitant now with YA vampires, just because it's like...
That's fair. Yeah. It can be a little overdone.
Where it's going.
Yeah.
Oh, no, A.M. Strickland. I'm like...
Yes.
I doubted you. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry. Our main character, something also about her, she is demisexual, which you do not see in books. And so I really, really like that. Like, she, that was really interesting to see, especially because, like, that's how I identify. And so seeing that in, like, a book, I'm like,
hey, yay.
That's me. So that was, like, really fun. A.M. Strickland's vampires. Oh, they're all some shade of gay.
Yes.
We got non-binary. We got full out. We got, like, trans. We have poly. We have pan. We have bi. It's like, we're here forever. We're gonna have fun. Like, they just embrace that point.
I love that sexuality
is completely fluid, and it's just such a fun read. Such a fun book. I really did enjoy that.
I love that.
let's save that one because. We all know how I get about that one. Katie Robert, Demon's Bargain.
We love Katie Robert! Come to our event in August!
I love Katie Robert. This is from the Demon's Bargain series, or Devil's Bargain series, something. Okay. This one is complete non-binary main character, love interest, because she has the dual POVs.
Right, yes.
So that's why I'm like, love interest, but also main character.
Yeah.
They are one of the POVs.
Yep.
And it's between them and this queer witch. And this witch summons them and is like, I need to get to the Shadow Market to reclaim this lost, like, trinket that was stolen from me. And of course, they're, like, insanely attracted to each other. This demon is just full-on flirtatious, which is like, no, none of that. We have to stay focused. I have to get this thing for now. It's just, like, fun, flirty, sexy. It's Katie Robert.
I love her.
Yeah, so I just love, like...
I feel like that event is going to have the most Gibson staff members of any event, like, in attendance.
Can I tell you, we are partnering with Thorns of Conquering on this event.
So excited.
So anyone who buys a Katie Robert book at the event, or, you know, we'll see how we feel the night of. We might let people who bought the book before the event also. We'll get a gift certificate to Thorns.
Oh, fun.
You're welcome. I'm so excited.
It's going to be so good.
There's a giant stack of Katie Robbins books. Like, does this count?
Literally. Literally. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love her so much.
I love how she writes queer characters, because they just exist. Like, there's no, like...
They just are.
Yeah, they are just there, and they are sexy, and they are funny, and I love it. And then, like, for some manga recs, which I think it's really cool to see, like, especially in manga, because Asia is still relatively a bit behind.
Right, yeah.
But one of my favorite manga duologies, which this is explicit, it's adult manga, it's explicit, is Moon and Sun by Akane Abe.
Okay.
It is a non-binary love interest who runs a drag company, like a performance kind of troupe.
Cool.
Uses they, he pronouns throughout the book. Mm-hmm. And, like, they, I don't want to say cross-dress because, like, if...
Yeah.
But they like to, they like a more feminine approach. They have, like, the wigs and they're really good at makeup. They hold, like, makeup sessions for all women. It's, like, the story starts with, like, this guy. He's, like, this Yakuza kid and he's, like, drunk and causing, like, a ruckus at the... at this company, the drag theater, where his friend is, and that gets him in trouble with the boss, who is the, and he starts to realize, wait, this is more than what I thought, and so he grows as a character and he learns more about drag. And yeah, so it's really good. It's really, really revolutionary for manga, I feel like. So that was like a really good story. I did love that one a lot. And then this one is not out yet. Oh, well, okay. It's out on Webtoon.
Okay.
And the physical binding of it comes out November 21st. Wonderful. And I'm so excited because it's one of my favorite Webtoons of all. And it's called Boyfriends. And, like, it's all pastel, like, color theme. Very fluffy. Slice of life. It's college kids. And they don't, like, they have real names, but we don't really use them. Like, I think their real names were said as, like, a side note, like, after, like, the first 50 episodes or something.
Oh, my God.
So they go by Prep, Goth, Nerd, and Jock.
Oh, my God. Yes!
And Goth is actually a trans character.
Yes.
And they are, and, like, he's just, like, he's so awesome. I love Goth. We, like, all are like, oh my God, Goth. Goth making all of us blush over here because it's just so forward. A big thing I like about this is it's called Boyfriends because they are all together.
Aww.
So it's four of them in a closed polycule.
Oh my God,
and it's like so they've never been in, like, a poly relationship before for, like, I think most of them, it's like their first relationship too. And so it's just, and it's, like, a really kind of good introduction to poly in general and how, like, natural it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no, like, angst, no drama, no, oh my God, this is so weird.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, hey, we all like each other. Like, I know we're dating, but we like you guys, too. Can we, like, maybe make this work? Let's do this. So it's just, like, fun little adventures, and it's really cute and sweet, and I adore it. And then I have not shut up about this since I read this book in December.
I know exactly what book is coming, and I'm so excited.
I have not shut up about it. I've screamed about it. Everybody at the store knows how it's much true. I love this book. It is a wolf song by TJ Klune. It's like the first book of the Green... is it Green Creek or Green River? Oh, wow.
I think it's Green Creek.
Green Creek series? Wow, fake fan. So Wolf Song, it's not featured as much, but each book features a different, like, relationship in this werewolf pack because it's gay werewolves.
Gay werewolves!
And I'm just like, tell me less. Like, give it to me now. So each book goes over a different, like, wolf, and so later in the series we get a full on asexual romantic couple.
Cute.
And it's just really and we have an arrow couple in here, or an arrow person, not couple, arrow person in here, which I'm like, okay, Ace is getting a little bit more recognition, but Arrow is kind of like Demi, where you don't really see that.
Can you explain what's Arrow short for? It
aromantic, sorry.
Yes.
Just some of our listeners. and so Wolf Song, it's just okay. I don't even know how to describe it anymore. It's just so good. It comes out July 4th, which I didn't realize was so close. I'm like, oh my God, that comes out before Speak Now. Like, I've been reading everything before or after Speak Now.
Incredible.
This is Fal's brain. Yeah. So I get to, like, so I'm gonna get that and I'm just gonna save it till, like, Speak Now comes out, and I'm gonna reread the whole thing all over again.
This is like a
500 plus page book. I read it in, like, one night.
I remember coming in, and you were, like, looking at Edelweiss, and you were like, oh, hey, look at this. There's a new TJ Klune up on Edelweiss. And I was like, oh, that's neat. And the next day, I saw you, and you were like, it was so good. I was like, wait, what?
I, like, devoured that book.
I was so, every time I walked by, by you that day, you were like, now this is happening. Let me tell you all about this. Okay, now this is happening. And yeah, you read it in one day. And
it was
delightful.
It was so good. It's like, it is just, like, I don't know how he does it. It's like his words just pull you in and they make you feel exactly what you're supposed to be feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, grief? Let's make you feel all of it. You're not just gonna be like, oh, this, how sad. You're gonna be like, oh my god, my actual heart is breaking, shattering. I'm going to never recover from this. Let me sink into this deep abyss that is grief. Oh. So he's just great. It was so cute. It was like found family, which is like a big thing.
Yeah.
Pack. Just like healing, because there's like a huge tragedy that rocks them, like the first book, and that ends up being like the catalyst for like this first book and like the rest of the series is all kind of born from this like giant tragedy.
Yeah.
And the repercussions, and so it's just like healing and just. Like, the main couple of the first book, like I'm pretty sure I haven't read the full series again, only the first two are, like, out on Anaways.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure the first two, I'm pretty sure all of them will have happy endings. If they don't, I will actually call him up and be like, hey.
Yeah, I would assume.
Yeah. Yes. Raven Song recently came up on Anaways, and I was like, oh, we all know what's gonna happen. Read that in a day, too. Just, like, inhaled it. And that, so something about Raven Song, so, like, Wolf Song kind of had your typical kind of younger kind of, gay couple. The queer couple highlighted in Raven Song, they're, like, older. They're like, late 30s, early 40s, which I really like seeing. Like, because, again, like, that was something I liked about the, House in the Cerulean Sea was that was an older queer couple. And that one really focused mostly on, like, forgiveness and healing, and that was, like, a big thing. And it's just, if you want a werewolf pack with witches and gay and, like, all the feelings in the world.
Yes.
Wolf Song will be out July 4th, and Raven Song will be out August 1st. I know that's my own handwriting.
Yay!
But, yeah, those are, like, some of my big picks that I really enjoyed.
So excited for those. What else? Oh, I started reading. I haven't finished it yet. But the new T.J. Alexander? Double check that.
Chef's Choice?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so the new T.J. Alexander is called Chef's Choice, and that one is, the two main characters are both trans, and they're doing fake dating.
Oh.
And it is so... It's so chaotic from the beginning. Like, they're in this bar, and one of them is just, like, talking to one of her friends, and, like, this person comes up and is like, I need you to pretend to be my partner immediately. And they're like, what? And they're like, hold on, I need to FaceTime my, I think, mom. I'm like, okay. And it's basically, like, one of them needs to be... like, in a relationship because their grandfather is very traditional and, like, will... It's one of those things where it's like, I will only pass down the family, whatever, wealth to you if you can, A, be in a relationship that I approve of, and B, like, pass this crazy, like, culinary test thing. And so it's like... fake dating plus this like chef competition basically with two trans characters, and it is delightful. It is really cute. Again, I haven't finished it yet, but I'm loving that one so far. I love a chaotic book. And that one is chaotic, so I'm excited for that one.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have a few different kind of things.
Would love
kind
of to
subsection.
Love to hear them.
I'll start with a graphic novel that I read recently, Mimosa by Archie Bongiovanni.
Mm-hmm.
It's a graphic novel. It follows the lives of a group of queer friends as their friendship starts to deteriorate.
Mm.
It really reminded me of Alison Bechdel's Dykes to Watch Out For.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's kind of grappling with the fact that found family may not be forever. They may be your found family for a while. Yeah, it's yeah, and it hit a little hard for me, but yeah. So it was, that one was really well done. Lots of trans characters. It's a good one. And then I wanted to talk about a couple books I haven't read but have come out recently that I am excited about and are by or about trans people. Start with the very obvious Page Boy by Elliot Page.
Yes! We love him!
We love him. I mean, like, I think it's hard to explain to someone who wasn't a millennial, maybe... girl identified person in like 2007, what Elliot Page means to us. Like, oh, I remember sitting and watching Juno on somebody's iPod video in study hall in the library. Like, we would just watch it on repeat.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
comfort movie.
Comfort movie. We loved it. And it's just been nice to grow up with Elliot Page, and I'm really excited to read this. And he does read the audiobook, which is probably how I'm going to read it when I get to it. But
we love him. Looked a lot like Juno as a young teen.
I can see that.
Got compared to Juno a lot.
Yeah.
And back in the days of MySpace, dear listeners, I once got a MySpace comment from Elliot Page saying that he saw the resemblance between us.
Oh my god.
And I promptly died.
Incredible.
Because this was, again, like, he'd only done Juno. Like, he wasn't, like massively he was just dicking around on MySpace. Like, just hanging out on MySpace. And was like, oh, yeah, no, I see the resemblance. And I was like, ah! I love him. I have followed his career so closely. And when he came out, I was so, so happy for him. And I bought Page Boy on release day.
Yep.
And I can't wait to read it. I've heard amazing things. So,
yeah.
We're so proud of him.
Yeah, so proud. Another nonfiction that I want to recommend, or maybe highlight, I guess, because I have not read these. I don't want to say that I'm...
Yeah.
Anyway, another one that I want to highlight is A Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar by Harry Nicholas. It is the... memoir of a trans gay man living in London and kind of figuring out his identity. So he kind of describes it as his identity cycling through like lesbian, straight man, gay man, and like having to kind of figure out both his gender and his sexuality.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do have a special place in my heart for this one. Because I kind of came into my own and, like, came into my gender in gay bars in London, with the, University of Westminster, LGBTQ society, which Harry was also a part of.
Aww.
So I'm sure Harry does not remember me, but, like, a person who I knew, and he's very cool, and I love that he wrote a book, and I'm really, really excited to read it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then another nonfiction, Miss Major Speaks, Conversations with a Black Trans Revolutionary, by Miss Major and Toshio Miroknek. It is conversations with... Miss Major, who is 82 years old, she was at Stonewall. She's started one of the first needle exchanges in New York City.
Wow.
Just like very fascinating life, a queer elder. And it is written as a transcript, so it's a conversation between the two authors, which I really like as an idea of like getting this kind of oral history down where some people may not be up to writing a book or want to write an entire book, so having this document of their life, and the I've read the introduction, and the co-author who's in conversation with her is like, you know, I was so inspired and wanted to get this down. So yeah, I think that one's
sounds amazing.
Really, yeah, really good. Yeah, and all of these, both of these, Trans Man Walks Into a Gay Bar and Miss Major Speaks are like under 200 pages. Cool. So, real quick, reads. A couple fiction books that have come out or are coming out that look really good. There's Pony Boy by Elliot Duncan, which I believe Ryan grabbed it, or I think you both might have grabbed it to give to me.
Yeah.
I have not read it yet, but it is about a trans man who is studying philosophy in Paris, which is just like a whole vibe. And when he finishes his degree, he moves to Berlin with his girlfriend, where he immediately falls in love with a man who is obviously not his girlfriend. So it's about his struggles with addiction and eventually returning home to the Midwest from Europe and going to rehab, and it just sounds like a very melancholy, it has a certain vibe to it that I am excited about. I don't know how to describe it other than
that. It has a very Joe-friendly vibe.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like
you read the back of it and you're like, Joe would like this.
It's like, oh, it's sad and trans, and you're just like wandering around Paris being sad and like, yeah, that's my vibe. The other one is Transmogrify, 14 Fantastical Tales of Trans Magic, edited by G. Heron Davis. This is a YA anthology of magical trans stories.
Heck yeah.
I love the title. It has a gorgeous cover. It's all like pink and purple and so cute. So yeah, if you're looking for short stories. And then I want to just highlight a couple sequels to trans books that I have loved. I have read some of them and haven't read others. Shadow Cabinet by Juno Dawson. It comes out this Tuesday from recording, so when you're listening to this, it will already be out. We are doing an event with Juno, so definitely check out the recording of that if you weren't able to attend. It's great. It's really kills it with the like second book in the trilogy, because sometimes those can be a little difficult.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it, and it really complicated a lot of the characters who were in the first book. He Who Drowned the World by Shelley Parker Chan is the sequel to She Who Became the Sun, which is a reimagining of the founding of the Ming Dynasty in China. It's a historical fantasy with a trans main character, and it's so good. I love that first book so much, and so I'm so excited for the second. And the last one I'll mention is Mammoth at the Gates by Nevo. This is part of her Singing Hills cycle, starting with Empress of Salt and Fortune, When the Tiger Came Down the Mountain, and Into the Riverlands. It features a non-binary monk who goes around collecting stories and in this fantasy world, and it's just really nice, and like they come out like once a year, and it's just like a little cute, nice, like, oh look, I get to read this one, and
when
then
you
like
go.
It's just very sweet and nice. So
I need to read those, because I feel like they really snuck up on me. Like, all of a sudden, there were, like, two or three of them, and I was like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah. Like, no.
They just appeared one day.
She does put them out, I think, once a year about. And
I love her writing.
Yeah. It's so good, and it's just, again, that quick, you don't have to be like, oh, gosh, okay, I need to parcel out time to read this whole book. You're like, oh, it's a little 120-page novella.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Amazing. Any other recommendations?
I mean, there's this book, I haven't read it, I just saw it today, it was just added today in Idaways, and I was like, that looks really good, so I'm now pulling up the description, because I have the memory of a pea.
I mean, you've heard me describe some of these books. It's like, I don't know what my job is. I don't know, there's like a person in it, and then maybe another person, and I think they do something. I don't know.
A time that Elizabeth, or you or Elizabeth pulled me over to hand sell A Marvelous Light, which, you know, I should be able to do. And I was like, I don't know, gay wizards, I guess. And the person was like, and whoever it was I was with was like, yeah, and this. And I'm like, oh yeah, that. Uh-huh.
Also that.
It's called Drag to the Wedding.
Ooh.
He's here to slay, but will he stay?
Oh my god.
It's written by Andrew Gray, and the summary is, James Pettica is living the single gay life he always wanted. A police officer in Chicago, he has a good job, good friends, and he's 2,000 miles away from his family's expectations. He also has a problem. He needs a date for his sister's wedding in Missoula, Montana, but his family has no idea that he's gay, and he'd like to keep it that way. The solution. Daniel Bonifant, a.k.a. Lala Traviata, the drag queen of the Chicago drag scene.
Oh.
Lala is the real thing. She can sing, she can dance, and she can throw more shade than a solar eclipse.
Oh my god.
One drink and plenty of dishing later, Daniel agrees to help James out and be his incognito date to the wedding. Daniel's drag diva skills are put to the test right away with the bride's ill-fitting wedding dress, a groom who's a danger on the dance floor, and more drama than auditions for a gay man's chorus.
Oh?
Faking this relationship and ignoring the very real feelings developing between them might just be the performance of their lives.
Oh my god!
It sounds amazing, and I want to read this, like, immediately. Like, the tagline, like, or, like, you know, like, the comp titles, like, is The Wedding Date Meets The Birdcage in this laugh-out-loud gay romantic comedy from Andrew Gray. It just sounds amazing.
Oh my god.
So, like, that is just, like, something I wanted to throw out there. It, like, really just popped up on, and I was like,
I need
that. That looks amazing.
That sounds incredible. Yeah, so that's just a tiny taste of some of the incredible, incredible queer lit that is out in the world right now. We have so many more recommendations.
So many. Please come talk to us.
Please come talk to us. It's our favorite thing. I can't even tell you, like, how delighted I get when I hear someone mention that they're looking for, like, gay books, and I'm like, oh, hi, we have so many recommendations for you. Let me grab all of my coworkers.
Yeah, what kind of gay are you looking for? Because I have a different coworker for different identities and age groups and genres.
It is phenomenal. It's so much fun. So again, we have so many curated lists on the website, so I will link those in the show notes so you can browse those in addition to everything that we talked about here. I mean, you can't do better than coming in and talking to the booksellers, because we have opinions. But for now, I will do our little wrap up. So just a reminder, Libra FM, we love. Use our code LAYDOWN at checkout for a free audiobook credit. It's a good time to switch to Libra FM.
Just, it is. And so many of the books we talked about, we listen to.
We do,
on
yeah.
Libra FM, so.
Yeah. And Craig and Karen, who host the Libra FM podcast, are going to be on our podcast later this year. Ooh. So you should switch to Libra FM before that episode so that you can feel very cool when you listen to that episode and be like, I already subscribed to Libra FM.
A little elite feeling when you're ahead of the game.
Exactly! You can feel superior to everyone else. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will also be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye! Bye.